broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is indeed the broadcast for January the 5th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour two of two, and our goal, steady as a rock, that is to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live. Last hour, we talked about news the networks refuse to use. Liberty Roundtable Live Week in Review. I'm telling you, it's just amazing how much news we cover in a day. And it's also amazing how many solutions we bring to the table, folks. Check it out, libertyroundtable.com. The broadcast will be up not too long after I get off the air today, as it is 6 days a week on your favorite talk show. All right, hour two starts now. News the networks refuse to use at your fingertips free. Live and on demand at libertyroundtable.com. All right, the question is this. Is there a 10-foot wall outside of Barack Hussein Obama's house? Believe it or not, the Daily Caller says we went there to find out. Yeah. So here's what happened. President Trump has often criticized former President Barack Obama for having a 10-foot wall around his house in Washington, D.C. And Trump tweeted recently, President and Mrs. Obama built, have a 10-foot wall around their D.C. mansion compound. I agree. Totally necessary for their safety and security. The U.S. needs the same thing, just a slightly larger version, says President Trump. Donald J. Trump, that's what he tweeted, huh? So is this true? The Daily Caller asks. And then they continue and say, here's what we actually know about it. Obama purchased a mansion in the Washington, D.C. area. They call it the neighborhood of Kalorama or whatever it is, for $8.1 million back in 2017. So he buys an $8 million plus mansion, right? And they have beefed up the security features of the mansion. They've added security features to the home. We know this. They included a tall pillared wall around the front of the home. We know that. And they have a high-tech guard tower so that the Secret Service can control entry to and from the home. The problem is that no definitive accounts of the security features have been reported, so it's hard for us to know the exact truth of Donald's statements. But believe it or not, the Daily Caller went and they traveled to Washington, D.C., to the neighborhood of Barack Obama to find out if the 10-foot wall existed. Question then, what did they find? They say this, we found out that Obama does not have one wall. He has many walls. Yeah. He has many walls. He has barricades. He has armed guards entirely blocking the suburban road where he lives. Did you understand that? Obama doesn't have one wall. He has multiple walls. He has many. He has barricades and he has armed guards directly guarding where he lives. Multiple cement and iron barriers or barricades block the way leading up to the Obama home. Believe it or not, listen carefully. A Secret Service car, an agent, actually keep people from entering the stretch of road on both ends of Barack Obama's property, keeping people away from about 1,000 feet in both directions. Wow. So think about that for a minute. So the bottom line is it's all true. Multiple cement and iron barricades block the roads leading up to the Obama mansion. And Donald says the U.S. needs the same thing, slightly larger version. See, I agree. And let's not play games with a wall. Donald's calling a wall the same thing in Obama's case as he wants for the United States. Now, that what they would say is, oh, we're not talking about one beautiful wall. We're talking about a series of walls. We're not talking about a single security feature. We're talking about multiple security features. I agree. And I think that's what Donald means as well. But is there a 10-foot wall outside of Barack Obama's house? The Daily Caller went to find out, and they finally say this at the end. We can't verify if there's a single wall because it was so security-prone that we couldn't even get there to find out. Right? Think about that for a minute. Think about what we're saying here. Is there a wall? Yes, there is. So they couldn't find out if there's a single wall. But they did prove that there are multiple cement and iron barricades block the road leading up to the Obama mansion. And they have verified that a Secret Service car and agent are there. And they couldn't even get close enough to the wall to Obama's house to verify. So what we're doing is we're debating a single wall here. Wrongfully so. We're getting caught in semantics. The bottom line is Donald Trump is saying, hey, there's significant security for President Obama. Wouldn't that same thing be good for the nation? And then they're mocking and saying, oh my gosh, Obama doesn't have a wall like that. That isn't even true. And they go on. But the truth is, Daily Caller went there to find out, and there was so many barriers, so many walls, so many defense measures, so many security measures, including people and guards and armed people and barriers and fences and cement and steel and multiple cement and iron barricades blocked the roads leading up to the Obama mansion to the point where they couldn't even get the answers. Think about that for a minute. And then the mainstream press has the audacity to play games of semantics and run around and say, Donald's not telling you the truth. There's not even a wall. What? But this, ladies and gentlemen, is the game they play. Right? I mean, this is the situation that we face. Is Donald telling the truth? I say that he is. I don't want to get caught up in the semantics. All I know is that, you know what? There's so much security around Barack Obama's mansion in D.C. that you can't even find out if there's a wall or not. Is the Daily Caller telling the truth? I'm convinced they are. I would love to go see if there's a wall around Barack Obama's house, but you know what? It's too expensive for me to go. Right? Anyway, what a sad tale to tell. Now, we hear that they're trying to reopen the government. I don't know that I believe it. Do you? When they say they're trying to open the government, who's they? That's the first question you got to ask. Who are they? Okay, because I don't want to open the government. You say, wait a minute, Sam, are you backing a government shutdown? No, I'm not. See, remember on Liberty Roundtable Live, we think outside the box. We base our viewpoints on principle, not on politics. We base our viewpoints on teaching correct principles, not on backing certain people. This is not a political agenda. This is a moral discussion. I think we should reopen the constitutional form of government. In other words, go look at your supreme law of the land, the Constitution. And if there's delegated authority to carry out a mission, I think they're obligated to do it yesterday. We've hired them to do that. Get it done. Get it done. However, if there's anything that's unconstitutional, I hope we never fund it again. But see, nobody's talking like I am. They're just talking about open the government, shut the government, and Donald's going to lose the battle. And the Democrats are going to lose. Donald's going to get his wall. No, he's not. Open the government. Let's talk later. Let's don't open the government. It could be closed for months on end, or it could be opened tomorrow. You never know. You'll be surprised, says Donald. And it's a lot of political theater and political posturing, but it isn't valuable or truthful. I want to open constitutional, delegated, legitimate government immediately. I want to open the constitutional literal government right now and think it never should have been shut down. And shame on those who, for political reasons, are circumventing the supreme law and the appropriate delegated responsibilities. Shame on them. But at the same time, hey, most of the government that is unconstitutional does not have proper authority or delegation or funding, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to open that ever. But who's talking about it the way I am? So I'm frustrated by this, you know, idea that are trying to reopen the government, question mark, is my headline. I don't think they are. I don't think anybody is really talking about or focusing on the proper role of limited constitutional government and saying we're going to look at the Constitution to decide what to open in government. We're going to really say this is an opportunity to shut down unconstitutional government permanently and return to the supreme law of the land and legitimately fund that which is constitutional, that which is proper delegated responsibility and authority. I want to see that happen yesterday. But is there anybody educating about and talking related to this as we are? See, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's talking about that. All right, did you hear GOP Senator Pat Roberts of Canada? Of Kansas. He's set to announce that he'll retire. He's not going to be running in 2020. He's out. GOP Sen, Pat Roberts of Kansas, is out. He'll retire. Wow. I think that's great news. You say, wait a minute, Sammy's a Republican. I understand, but I'm just saying this. It's an opportunity to get a constitutionalist in there, isn't it? Liberty Roundtable Live.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. They will attack you. They will slander you. They will seek to destroy your career and your family. They will seek to destroy everything about you, including your reputation. They will lie. Lie, lie, and then again, they will do worse than that. They will do whatever's necessary. The Clintons are criminals. Remember that. They're criminals.
I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
All right, Sam Bushman on your radio. We're talking about the government shutdown. Do you really think they're trying to open the government again? I don't. I think there's a lot of game playing and a lot of political posturing, and I don't think they care. What they ought to care about is the oath they swore to. Yeah, they swore an oath to the supreme law of the land to protect our country from enemies, foreign and domestic. And I submit that's not only people enemies, that's situational enemies. In other words, shutting down the proper role of limited constitutional government is a threat to the republic. National security is at stake, folks. Shame on them. So I don't think they're trying to reopen the government. I hope they always open open constitutional government and shut down unconstitutional government. The sooner, the better they focus on the real issues. I would love it. I'll give you an example. To where I don't believe it's a real discussion or a real debate at all. I think it's nothing but game playing. GOP Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas is going to be retiring, so that's good news. You say, wait a minute, he's a Republican. Yeah, but he doesn't have a very good freedom score. He hasn't really stood with the supreme law of the land, and so I don't need Republicans like that, folks. I need constitutionalists, and I don't care if they're Republicans or not. Why do I need constitutionalists? Because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, that's why. All right, there's a sad story in the news, and I want to break this down a little bit differently than many would. That's what Liberty Roundtable Live is famous for, our unique out-of-the-box viewpoints on topics. Headline says, quote, for Native Americans, shutdown cuts lifeline of everyday services. And it's a big, long article written by the New York Times. Now, I don't know what a Native American is. And let me explain what I mean by that. They want you to believe that Native Americans are people that have been here forever. Right? And so Indians are Native Americans. And Elizabeth Warren, who's running to be president and vying for the presidency, she claims she was a Native American. She took a DNA test, and it really proved that she's no more Native American than anybody else. If so, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver. Less than 1%. So what is a Native American? Well, I was born in America. My parents were born in America. Their parents were born in America. Am I a Native American? What does Native mean? You say, well, Sam, Native means that they've been here, that, you know, they originated here. What do you mean originated? We don't know where anybody originated, do we? Who was the first man on earth? Well, Sam, I don't know. It was billions of years ago. Well, the Bible says Adam. Well, where was Adam born? You know, we don't even know that stuff. So I don't know what Native means. I know that I'm as American as the Indian that's here. And I'll tell you why. We both live here. We were both born here. And why should we separate these discussions? Well, you say, Sam, you know, we abused the Indians back in the day, and therefore it's kind of political payback. We owe them something now. See, that's where I disagree. Now, don't get me wrong. I do believe there was some wrongs done to the Indians by the whites, and I think it's a sad tale to tell. It's a sad chapter in our history. I stand against treating God's children, no matter what nationality or what reference point or ethnic references we make to them. We're all God's children, and we need to treat each other such. Right? That's clear. So I'm not into the racial part of this discussion. But I want to talk about this idea that for Native Americans, shutdown cuts lifeline of everyday services. Okay? So they say for a tribe of Chippewa Indians in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, the government shutdown comes with an incredible price tag. About $100,000 every day of federal money that simply does not arrive because of the shutdown. What do they do with the money? They keep health clinics staffed, food pantry shelves full, and employees paid. The tribe is using its own funds to cover the shortfalls for now. If the standoff in Washington continues much longer, that stopgap money will be depleted. Later this month, they say workers could be furloughed and health services could be pared back. Everything says Aaron Payment. He's the chairman of this. I don't know how to say it. Salt Stee tribe. That's what he says here. Now, I find it interesting. I kid you not. This is not a joke. We're talking about a guy named Aaron Payment is the guy that's talking about the lack of the payment. For many Americans who are not federal workers or contractors, a shutdown is a minor convenience. A trip to a national park might be canceled. A call to a government office may go unanswered. But for Native American tribes, which rely on federal money to operate, they say a shutdown could cripple their most basic functions. All across, quote, Indian country, the federal shutdown slices deep, they claim. Generations ago, tribes negotiated treaties with the United States government guaranteeing funding for services like health care and education in exchange for huge slices of government land. Yeah. Now, I understand that. The federal government owes us this. We prepaid with millions of acres of land, say a lot of these tribal leaders. Mr. Payment criticized the shutdown of the government. We don't have the right to take back that land, he claims, and so we expect the federal government to fulfill its treaty and thus its responsibilities. On the Navajo Nation, for example, a mostly rural reservation in the mostly Red Rock Canyon that spans parts of New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah, the government shutdown has already been difficult, said the Navajo Nation's president. A blanket of snow has covered the region, but the roads aren't even plowed. So many people are actually trapped in their homes, unable to make the 20 or the 50-mile trip to buy water, groceries, and medicine, etc. The Interior Department's, quote, Interior or Indian Affairs Bureau provides basic services to about 1.9 million American Indians and, quote, Alaskan Natives, often by funneling funds to the tribes to administer the services themselves and or by employing federal workers to run the programs for the Indians. This means that services from law enforcement to tribal courts to disaster relief, not to mention road maintenance, are often completed by tribal employees whose salaries rely on federal funding. Or a lot of times this work is done by federal workers, some of whom are actually tribal citizens. The Bureau of Indian Affairs was set to furlough 2,295 to 4,000 some odd employees during the shutdown. They say meaning that several of the salaries will be slowed and or stopped because the federal government contributes to the salaries of many of the Navajo Nation. And believe it or not, it's different for an Indian family, they say. It's not, you know, a household income. Oftentimes these wages, in other words, a single salary could support a family of 6, 10, or even 12 people, sometimes even in multiple dwellings. Believe it or not, loan sharks have started circling with this shutdown, where they're leaving flyers on the doors of these Indians' homes. And they say it just kind of snowballs into our people. People end up doing things they know they shouldn't do, but they feel like they have no choice. They have to keep their heater going. They have to keep their water on. And then they talk about an Indian reservation in northern Minnesota. And they say tribal officials there have instituted a, quote, hiring freeze and are planning to meet later this week to discuss budget cuts. Kathy Shaver, she's the tribe's chairwoman, said that tribal funding is continuing for now, but it'll probably come down to, quote, minimal basic services if the shutdown lasts for another month. Already police officers on the reservation who are employees of the federal government, not the tribe, are being forced to work without pay. These officers are putting their lives on the line, and they don't even know if they're going to get a paycheck or not. Tribes are making plans for how long they can operate without knowing whether they'll be even reimbursed for shutdown or expenses during the shutdown. Officials with the Indian Nation in Wisconsin said that they have made contingency plans and that they could manage a whole another month without any cuts. Now, I guess some tribes in Idaho said they didn't have enough money to operate through today, but after that, they'd have to reevaluate. Things do grind to a halt. Now, Kevin Washburn, he serves as the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs under Barack Obama, I guess. He said, hey, these Indian countries stopped moving forward during the shutdown. And it starts actually moving backwards, sad to say. These people just spiral into even greater poverty. A spokesman for the Interior Department said so many people were out of the office for the holidays that they were furloughed or gone. He just couldn't even figure out where things stood. He said, I don't have any details from around the country to give you because everything is shut down and I just don't know. I'll give you the rest of the story in seconds on Liberty Roundtable Live.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Yeah. Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters. At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
All right, we're talking about this incredible article in the New York Times for Native Americans. Shutdown cuts lifeline of everyday services. That's kind of the problem, folks. They say for tribes, this has become a familiar, painful scenario. In 2013, for example, during Barack Hussein's presidency, a lengthy shutdown required a California tribe to shut down its child care program. In Minnesota, a tribe had to postpone non-emergency medical procedures for folks because they didn't have the cash. And they say some actually lost employees to layoffs, especially in the medical profession. They had medical staff who didn't even return after they got back up and running. Some of the tribes are now saying, we're not going to collapse, but we do have to decide what we can do with our own funding, said Christine McPherson. She's the executive director for one of these tribes. And she says, but we'll never close. This is a true federal obligation through treaties to Native Americans, they claim. This is different than really any other government agency. If the shutdown continues, it could also curtail the Department of Agriculture's food program that helps feed about 90,000 natives in 2017. The program is funded through January, but no new federal money will be designated if the government closes beyond that, they say. Now, I don't believe the federal government owes this. And let me explain what I mean by that. I get why it was done. It was done to right a lot of the wrongs that were done to the Indians. We should have never rounded up the Japanese and put them in internment camps back in the day of World War II. We should never be abusing the blacks as we do currently today. Government-backed abortion services through Planned Parenthood are attacking the black communities more than any other community. The Planned Parenthood death centers are literally positioned in the poorest neighborhoods across our country. It's wrong, and it needs to stop. We need to remember we're all God's children. So it's been wrong to the Indians. We did wrong to slaves. There's a lot of sad chapters in American history. I'm not happy about them. But I acknowledge them, and I say, you know what? What we need to do is learn from those mistakes. And so I get why the founding fathers put in place ways to take care of some of the Indians, especially back in the day when, you know what, things were much more racial than they are now. But this idea that we're going to create these, quote, countries, it's hard to know if you call them countries exactly, but these countries, right? Indian reservations are considered country, negotiated by treaty. But they're kind of a weird hybrid country. So the Indians have their own kind of countries. They have their own affairs, but yet they take orders from and plenty of financing with strings from the federal government, supposedly by treaty because they're a country. But by, I don't know what you say, mandate or force or whatever at the same time. And I believe that there was a time when, you know, these changes did need to occur because we did wrongfully force them off their lands and do some wrong things. But at the same time, at some point, you can't solve the mistakes of the past. Let's say two people get together and make a baby, for instance. Once that baby's alive, you can't really take that action of procreation back, can you? So, you know, how do you make restitution? How do you right the wrong? How do you correct the error? How do you recover from the... Well, oftentimes you need to learn to repent and forgive. And oftentimes you need to say, what's the best way forward given a bad situation? And I don't think keeping the Indians down on their, quote, lands, oftentimes they were given some of the worst lands of all, and then keep them down on small government checks, keep them in poverty, and then you get big companies that work deals out with them to mine their oil and to do different things. So the Indians really have a situation where they get pennies on the dollar, they're exploited at every turn, and they have these strange keep-them-down treaties going on with America. And then they say, we're entitled. The federal government owes us this. We paid with millions of acres of land. And that's where I disagree. That's where we've got to kind of deal with this in a different way. I get that it was that way. I don't deny that they gave land for services. But at what point does the land and services deal run out? Never? That's what they would have you believe. I disagree with that. At what point can we treat them as, quote, second-class citizens? You know, you have your own country, but not really. You have your own land, but we kind of control and say how you deal with the land and what you do. And, you know, the federal government should not be the source of support for the Indian reservations. If they're their own countries, let them negotiate treaties around the world like the rest of us. But I would propose a completely different plan. I would propose we let these Indian reservations become states. And I would say that we need to give them equal footing. They could either become their own state or they could join another state. But I think at some point we're going to need to get beyond this arrangement that we have with the Indians and the blacks. Okay, so you got this government housing that, you know, a lot of blacks live in and everything else. You got these Indian reservations with these supposed treaties that negotiate with these, I don't know what they are. They're kind of like half-sovereign countries. They're sovereign, but not really, but yet they're their own country, but not. But the Constitution doesn't govern them, but they don't have representation, but they get money. But they, okay, it's just a weird deal, right? But they don't have complete autonomy or real sovereignty. And, okay, that needs to stop. And we need to at some point say, listen, the purpose of the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, is to acknowledge God's in his heaven, and we are the children of God. And then to come back and say we need to eventually create equality for all. And so we're not going to give special handout privileges by treaty to these Indians. They can have their own countries if they choose, or their own states, either way. You know, it's going to be a road to hoe if you're your own country. I'd be careful with that idea. And you'd say, well, Sam, we can't have the country broken up like that. We already do by treaty, don't we? Well, yeah, Sam, but it's kind of this quasi-treaty where they're not really a country, but they are. And, well, hey, at how long are we going to say that we're going to pay them forever these stipends? Right? How long are they going to have different citizenship than you and I? Does a Native American, does an Indian have different citizenship than I do? Well, yeah, Sam, because they're in their tribal group and they have do they have more freedoms than we do? And in many ways, the answer is yes, they do. In many ways, they have less freedom. But when are we going to come back and say, look, let's have equality for all? Same thing with Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and some of these other, quote, territories. They have second-class status in many ways. They're their own country, but yet they're part of America. Well, it's the United States, but they have their own sovereignty. And should they become a state, and what should happen to them? And should we let them go and not be a territory and be their own country? Or should we have them become a state? You know, all those battles are happening with those people as well. And I say the sooner we get to a level playing field, the better. The sooner we get rid of these, quote, strange situations that create kind of a second-class citizen mentality. Okay, on one hand, you're saying, hey, is there a 10-foot wall around Barack Obama's house? He's kind of the elite on a government pension for life as former president. He's got multiple cement and iron barricades leading up to his Obama mansion. And he's literally got a security detail to watch from a guard tower and stuff like that to make sure he's secure. And then we say, hey, we're trying to reopen the government. We got to get this done. And then the next story says, hey, for Native Americans, the government shutdown cuts the lifeline of everyday services. Wait a minute. Why? Look, we can shut down in Washington, D.C. We shut down the ability to get married, but we've got the ability to get divorced open still. So we decide which piece would be shut down and which piece would not. And I submit to you, the first thing we need to do, again, this is Solutions Radio, right? The first thing we need to do, if we're going to be honest, is we would restore funding to the Indian reservations immediately. Why? Because we're not going to hold them hostage. They do have a legitimate treaty. And we do need to honor that treaty as long as it's in place. They say the government owes us this, and we prepaid with millions of acres of land. They're right. The Indians are right on that. I don't believe we should owe it forever because I believe we have the right to renegotiate it and to solve, create a better plan. But in the meantime, we do owe it. And so why would we keep government salaries running to congressmen and senators, but yet starve the Indian reservations of sorely needed funds? I think that's wrong. Why would they? Okay, I'll give you an example. They're going to keep the government open and keep Congress with Congress's salary, right? But I can't get a tax refund. They're now claiming that if the government stays shut down for much longer, I won't be able to get my tax return from the IRS. Well, you're not going to get me to advocate for the IRS or to open the IRS, that's for sure. But this is the game they're playing. Don't hold the Indians, the Native Americans, hostage. It's a shame.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
leave a message, press 1. To change your message, press 7.
Hey, Mom, Dad, Mark here. Wow, I love college, really. I never knew living on my own could be so, good for me.
To change your message, press 7.
So, here I am at college. It's cool. Well, of course, it's only been a week.
To change your message.
Hey, it's me. I was just remembering that time I hit my first home run, you know, through the garage window. Thanks for not being mad. No.
To change.
Hi. Boy, I miss you guys. I miss my room. I miss waking up to warm socks straight from the dryer. Warm socks.
Family. Isn't it about time?
Hi, it's Mark. Love you guys. I'll call you later.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Back with you live. We're talking about the Native Americans. Native Americans say, hey, the government owes us. We prepaid with millions of acres of land and the government shut down. They shouldn't hold us hostage. And I agree with the Indians. It's a shame. Okay? It's an absolute sad shame. Because we do, by treaty, owe it to them. Now, I disagree, though, with the idea that we owe it to them forever. Okay, we got to negotiate a better way out of it. So in the meantime, the immediate solution is for Congress to get to work and look through the supreme law of the land and find out what we ought to be doing and what we ought not be doing by delegation, by authority. And I think that holding the Indians hostage and not giving them their funds is an absolute disaster. We need to fix that yesterday. But they've uniquely positioned this shutdown to affect negatively so many people in an effort to force it back open. They want people who want their tax returns to beg for the IRS to open back up. Just stupid as all get out, right? They want Congress to keep their salaries, but to not have the Indians receive their money. It's a shame. So short term, I think we need to give the money back to the Indians ASAP and keep our obligations. It's like short term, I think we ought to give people who have bought into Social Security their money. We've made promises and we need to keep those promises. No doubt about it. But in a long-term view, I think we need to shut down the special privilege the Indians have, because at the same time, it keeps the Indians down and keeps them in this whatever class status, the second class, you know, hey, they're a country, but not really. Well, they're not really citizens. They're tribal members. They're Native Americans. They get checks and handouts. But what it does is it just keeps the people down. It disincentivizes them in a very sad way, and I reject it. So short term, we need to honor our commitments. Long term, we need to build a way out of it, to treat people equally and realize we're all God's children. All right. So I agree that for Native Americans, government shutdown cuts lifeline of everyday services. It's sad, and we need to restore it immediately. And then we need to quickly discuss negotiations and solutions that could make a difference, right? Right. There's another story that I find fascinating. There's a guy by the name of Dinesh D'Souza. Do you know who he is? Well, it turns out that he was discussing his pardon. He got a pardon by President Trump. Did you know that? And I'm so glad that he received this pardon. Joe Arpaio got a pardon. Dinesh D'Souza got a pardon. And I'm glad for them. But there's many other innocents in prison who need pardons as well. Well, it's pretty easy to accomplish if you know the right people. That's what's sad in America. We're not supposed to have kings or royalty or special privilege. You know, we believe in special privilege for none, right? Equality for all, opportunity for all, special privilege for none. That's what we in America supposedly believe. Well, anyway, Dinesh D'Souza got a special pardon, and he tells how he got the pardon. Listen to this.
Here's how this came about. I mean, certainly lots of people have prayed for me, and there was a movement in social media to sign petitions to the White House about a pardon. A month ago, my wife and I had dinner with Ted Cruz and his wife, Heidi.
Now, let me stop you there. How many of us get a chance to sit down with Ted Cruz and Heidi for dinner? Even if I was in his state, I couldn't get that done. But Dinesh got it done, and here's what happened.
In their at their home in Houston, And Ted Cruz goes, I've been thinking about this, Dinesh. Trump just pardoned Scooter Libby. He goes, this is just outrageous. I'm just going to go to Trump and just demand that he pardon you. And at the NRA convention, Trump was in Dallas. Ted Cruz jumped in the limousine. John Kelly was in the back. And Ted Cruz said to Mr. President, you really must pardon Dinesh. And according to Cruz, Trump looked over and said, done.
I clap, and I think that's wonderful news. I think that's great news that the president has the power to do that. And as long as this power is used very carefully, very, very rarely, I think it has extreme value, especially when our prison systems are broken as they are today. Nevertheless, I'm concerned that only the few get that in America these days. Hillary's got it. She's not even going to jail. Dinesh meets with Cruz. Hey, he's free, right? But listen up.
So and that set the legal process. It was a month before I got the call. But what this tells me is that that's Trump. And look how perversely they misunderstand him. Here's a guy who knew about my case. Mm. And the way he looked at it is, to put it in Trump's vernacular, as on the phone, he goes, man to man, you got screwed. That's Trump. That's how he saw it, and that instinctive sense of justice kicked in. So I do not think this was a case of calculation. Oddly, I think if it had been another Republican president, or any recent Republican president, they would have been more calculating. I don't think that even crossed his mind. Hmm. Trump's a little ADD, so it took Ted Cruz to go, hey, Mr. Trump, what about this one?
Yeah.
But Trump kicks right in and responds with what I think is his very visceral and kind of a inherent sense of justice and outrage.
He thought it was the right thing to do.
The right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dinesh, tell me a little bit about, there's a Robert Mueller connection here to a degree, right? When your case first surfaced, Mueller was head of the FBI, right? And this file that they had on you, originally the FBI didn't want to give it to the Justice Department, but then eventually they did, it was redacted, and inside that file was a lot of these political leanings that were relatively shocking as to why would they even be there in the first place. So as it relates to Mueller, what do you make specifically of, not necessarily Mueller's role in all of this, but from an integrity standpoint, considering Mueller is in the news now with this Trump investigation?
Well, all of us grew up with this sort of a romanticized view of these agencies like the FBI. And of course, the ordinary FBI guy on the street is doing their job, and they're doing a good job. But they're being directed to do things. And in my case, for example, there was a little army of these guys deployed on my case. Mm-hmm. Very odd. I mean, my case is a $20,000 case. The government wasn't even alleging that there was any quid pro quo. And I was on Megyn Kelly talking about the fact I wasn't, there was no dispute about the facts. Right. I said, yes, I did it. And I did it out of maybe misguided loyalty to a friend, but that's what happened. And I'm perfectly willing to accept the music. I demand that I receive the same penalty that anybody else would get who's in the same position. Because, of course, justice isn't just did you do it. One of the issues that's been coming out now, well, you did it. You admit you did it. Well, let's say you're speeding on the highway and you get 2 years in prison. The point isn't you did it. Yes, you did it. But nobody else who speeds on the highway is locked up for 2 years. That was the issue from the beginning. Right. So in my FBI file, what's interesting is it says, A, that they immediately assigned $100,000 to investigate my $20,000 case, which is a bit odd. And number two, my politics is red flagged. This is a right winger who's made a movie against Obama. Now, why would they do that? The reason they do that is that the FBI file goes to the Justice Department. Now, it doesn't go to Eric Holder. It goes to some other guy right. who's reading it. And the FBI needs to tell that guy, hey, here's a prominent critic of the president. You guys may want to go after this one. That's why that's in my file. Mm-hmm. But when you ask for the file, the FBI goes, oh, we can't release the file. There's all kinds of confidential information and exposed sources. National security is threatened. They give you all this humbug and nonsense. But in reality, they're protecting their own corruption.
Mm. So where does Mueller then fit in all of this? How much role do you think he had in that?
Well, I mean, he was the head of it. So I quite honestly, the judge, the Clinton appointee judge, would not let us look at the government's file or the FBI file to see who had been, because all those records are in the file.
Right.
And the judge goes, your claim of selective prosecution is all had and no cattle, sort of playing Texan for a moment. But he won't give you the information, the discovery that enables you to see, well, what happened here?
And that's what we see over and over and over, and why we have innocence in prison, because this due process is violated. They say, well, hey, Dinesh got his day in court. He was guilty and found guilty, and he even admits that he did it. And what Dinesh would say is, yeah, but the sentence doesn't fit the crime. I'm being dealt with much more harshly than many other people who have done similar and or the same things. I'm not asking to be let off the hook, but I am saying I shouldn't be dealt with more harshly because of my stance against Barack Obama. So Dinesh D'Souza discusses his pardon. And at the end of the day, Dinesh basically points out that it's a corrupt system. The judge says, hey, you don't have standing. The government didn't do this or that. And Dinesh and lawyers say, well, let us see the files so we can determine that for the truth. And they say, no, you don't have discovery here. Well, then you say, well, he's guilty and he had a fair trial. See, I say that's the due process violations that we speak of often on this program. And if you don't believe me, a follow-up story to this innocence in prison issue, you get Dinesh's example, a great, great insight into what really went down there. But then the next headline for the New York Times, what's this guy's name? He's a New York Times author. His name is Timothy Williams. He writes a piece, and the headline says this: misconduct in federal prisons goes unpunished, House study says. So now you got the New York Times, Timothy Williams literally admitting that there's misconduct in the federal prisons and it's going unpunished. And the House has studied it. And they're telling you that, hey, man, this is a serious problem. What do you think about that, folks? You comfortable with that? See, I'm not. I'm not comfortable with it at all. Now, they say DOJ investigating Ryan Zinke for possibly lying to officials. Well, what does that mean? Is Ryan Zinke going to get a fair, open trial, or are they going to say, like Dinesh D'Souza, well, you don't get the chance for discovery here. You know, classified documents are at stake here. Government security is at stake here. You know, national security is an issue here. You can't, Ryan Zinke, have due process, but yet you're guilty. Is that what they're going to do to Ryan Zinke? I pray not. And I'm not here to defend Ryan. I don't know the truth. But what I know is this. What I know, Dinesh literally talks about, they wouldn't give him discovery. And when I know that misconduct in federal prisons goes unpunished, according to the House study on the topic, I start to get very concerned that, you know what? We need serious, serious prison reform, don't we? Yes, we do. And we've been some of the greatest advocates for prison reform for decades. And we continue to advocate for the innocents in prison. And we will. And I pray for pardons for many other people, including a former Congressman Steve Stockman and many others. I'm glad Ammon Bundy finally got freedom. And I'm glad the truth applied to Ammon. Do I think Ammon made some mistakes? Absolutely. But do I believe he belongs in hardened prison for years? No, I do not. Do I believe Ammon Bundy is a threat to society? No, I do not. And this is where we need common sense and prison reform and accountability for government as well. All right, Ann Coulter says she would accept a border fence. She says, I would like to have exactly what Israel has. The battle over government continues, but I submit to you the truth shall set you free. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. Hopefully it was educational. Hopefully it was interesting. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. If you believe we provide value, please donate today. LibertyRoundtable.com for live and on-demand radio, free at your fingertips, and more. Thanks for being alongside 2 Hours in the Can. I'm Sam Bushman. We the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic. But y'all got to get involved and help. And we need to turn to God, family, and country. And we need to protect life, liberty, and property if we're going to get it done. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.